Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. On today's episode, I had the pleasure to speak with Mr. Evan Hackel, creator of the concept of engaging leadership. Engaging is with an I, and author of Engaging Leadership. Basically, Evan has started like 10 companies. During his tenure at GCCA Global Partners, he ran a $5 billion division. So Evan is amazing, but his story is even more amazing. But I'll let Evan tell you a snippet of it.
Oh, I was totally frustrated. Totally embarrassed. It was incredible. But that's my point, is I developed an internal strength. I developed a desire to do whatever it takes to get something done.
And that's Evan Hackel for you. He is currently the author of Engaging Leadership with an I-N-G-A-G-I-N-G, as well as the CEO of Tortle Training out of Charlotte, North Carolina. If you want to hear the unedited version of Evan and I's podcast, head over to my website at www.drjameskelly.com to get the full-length interview. Evan drops a little bit of knowledge in terms of what he does for positivity around his house, and I loved it, picked it up, and I've been using it in my house. So have a listen there. Also, please keep sending in your moments of adversity when leadership transformed after some adverse moment. And finally, thanks to C-Suite Radio for continuing to let me be part of their network. And have an awesome week, everyone. See you! So, Evan, can you tell my audience exactly what you do now in your life?
Well, I have a very unusual life. I call it a portfolio life. I am an active investor. I invest in businesses. I'm on advisory boards, on boards of directors. And then I have two businesses which I'm active in. I have a consulting business called Engage Consulting, and we focus on involvement and getting people in the business to participate at a higher active level so people feel like they're partners, not just employees, or they feel like they're partners, not customers. And I have an e-learning company called Tortle Training, and we're transforming how learning is done through really effective interactive e-learning. And we're, because of my franchise background, we're the largest e-learning company in the franchise space, but we also work outside of franchising with little companies like RJ Reynolds, Honda, to name a few.
I'm not familiar with those two companies, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure you've never heard of them.
So, all right, how does someone such as yourself, and we kind of talked a little bit offline before I hit the record button, get to where they're at? So where were you born at? Like, where were you raised in?
I was born in Rutland, Vermont, and I moved at the age of 10 to Castleton, Vermont, which was all about 10 miles away. And I think I had two very unique experiences. One, we had a family business, and my father and I bonded over business. I mean, that's what we talked about probably from the age 10 on. And so I was fascinated by business. I adored my father. I always wanted to be like him. So I had to work in the family business.
What was the business?
And that, well, you know, Vermont, we had to do a lot. It was electrical wholesale supply company. It was retail, consumer electronics and appliances and light fixtures. And we had a kitchen cabinet company that we sold retail kitchen cabinets and appliances. We also distributed kitchen cabinets and appliances. We also manufactured kitchen cabinets, just a small part of it. And then we entered the videotape rental boom. And that was the first business I franchised. But I would say, unlike all this business stuff I'm describing, probably the defining thing for me in being successful was I was born severely dyslexic. And when you're severely dyslexic, writing is very difficult. Reading is very difficult. I remember in the second grade, a teacher wrote a paragraph on the chalkboard, and everyone could go to recess as soon as they wrote that paragraph exactly the way the teacher wrote it. And I never got to go to recess. And when I got back, this teacher just looked at me and just, I define it as screaming. I don't know if she was actually screaming or not, yeah, but just embarrassed the heck out of me because I was literally unable to do it. And, you know, because you turn things around, you see things, sure, and it still happens to this day. But,
how,
you know, what you
learned. How old were you when you figured it out?
Well, I did not, you know, the first, you know, they thought I should go into vocational education, that, you know, I was dumb. And when I went to spend a summer in Mexico on an exchange student program where I live with a Mexican family, and they had intensive Spanish lessons, and they're the ones that I use the word diagnosed, discovered it, and then I went and I got diagnosed.
But how old were you?
When I went, I was 17. Up until that point, I just thought,
what the? So no one figured out between second grade and 17 that you had a severe reading disorder?
People knew I was, people discovered that, you know, people that knew me knew I'm trying to be modest here, but that I was very bright. But no, they did not know. And they knew something was wrong. They knew I had a really difficult time with English and with reading. When I got to college, I showed them all the information. I asked to have someone proofread my papers and to take tests orally. And they said that the school had never done it before, but out of courtesy to me, they would have me tested by their experts. And I remember this really clearly because I'm taking the test and the guy gives me the Wall Street Journal and says, read this article. I read the article and copy this over. And I go, God, you know, I read the article. I think I read it pretty well. I wrote this over. They're going to tell me I get no help. So I'm in with the dean of students. I'm in with this person. And the person says, never in my entire life have I met a person this disabled who has made it this far in the educational system. And from there, I went on to get my MBA in general management and finance from Boston College.
So can I ask you something just through that? How did you have the confidence? Because, you know, I've talked to many people who had dyslexia before. And, you know, and I had an interview a few weeks back with a guy named Chris Lockheed. I guess it was about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, who is super successful, but thought he was the dumbest kid ever because he had severe dyslexia. So how did you have the confidence to keep going?
I had parents that totally and completely believed in me.
Hmm.
Totally. And I remember because back in those days, they put you in classes based on your school ability. So I was in the, there were three, you know, the bright kids, the middle kids, and the dumb kids. I was in the middle kids. And when I was in eighth grade, my mother walked into the school principal and said, my son is not dumb. He is now moving to the bright kids class. And I actually started doing a lot better in school when we started moving at a pace that was, you know, more at my speed. But I really had unconditional love for my mother and my father, who thought the world of me and thought that I was very bright.
But yeah, but I guess my question still, I mean, that's all amazing. I think that says a lot about what society sometimes lacks giving kids who have disabilities, right? Like just unconditional love. Cause you know, there's always something deeper inside someone that I always, so this is my belief, right? I think everyone is super smart in something. You just have to find that something for that person. And that's not always an easy task, but I think everyone's like incredibly intelligent in something. Maybe I'm too optimistic about that, but I have to be because I would use
a different term. I would say everyone has a gift of something that they're really good at.
Okay, great.
It may be that they're great nurturing people, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily the smartest people, but they have, you know, great, you know, social understanding and things of that nature.
Totally agree. So better said. Everyone has a gift. You just have to find that gift. But I still can't believe that you didn't have a level of frustration, especially in high school when it comes to writing assignments. I mean, did you get a lot of help?
I was totally frustrated.
All right.
Totally frustrated, totally embarrassed. It was incredible.
Yeah.
But that's my point, is I developed an internal strength. I developed a desire to do whatever it takes to get something done. I realized I had to work longer. I had to work harder than everybody else. And that I developed a tremendous work ethic. I developed a tremendous amount of belief that I could make it happen. Now, I could never get a paper to be perfect, ever. I couldn't today get a paper to be perfect. I use dictation software and things that make my life a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But believe me, it's not perfect.
I kind of want to pivot a little bit to be conscious of your time as well. And so, you know, you have this lifelong struggle. I have a speaking struggle
struggle. Yes. Yeah.
Struggle. What is it? It's 10:30 my time. I've been up since 5:30. I'm allowed to be a little bit blurry eyed. This lifetime struggle with dyslexia, but yet you find these micro moments of success over and over and over again. But do you think some of your biggest influences in your life really revolve around, in terms of business now, revolve around you and your dad, and you starting at a young age, working with your father, getting a deeper understanding of business at a much earlier age than most people?
Yeah, I think I had a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. I do think that people can make up for that advantage by reading business books. I'm an avid reader of business books. I love reading business books, you know, certainly getting a business degree. But, you know, the conversations I had with my father when I was younger, you know, gave me a big head start, you know, gave me 10-year head start on people in business. And I know a lot of people listening say, well, I can't do that. And then are some of you saying, oh, yeah, I worked in my family business, too. No, it was absolutely helpful. Is it essential? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of people who have been successful that didn't grow up in a family like business. Or grew up in a family business, but with a father that was unwilling. My father would share the financial statements every month with me, and we'd talk about all the business doing. Mean, you know,
that's, you know, amazing.
When I went to college, he had his secretary package up every week a blind carbon copy of all of his memos. So this is back in the day when people typed. And so I could read them. So we could talk business.
Yeah, why would he do, I mean, why was there... Did he not have a business partner, or did he feel like he was educating you?
I think it was how we had fun. So I probably tossed a baseball with my father 10 times. I cannot think of a single sporting event that my father ever went to. We had a swimming pool in our house, and I think my father swam in it 3 times. My father was a workaholic, which is not something I have inherited. I think work-life balance is huge. And particularly, you know, when I changed, you know, I ran a $5 billion business at age 50. I left it, took a year off, skied 102 days, thought about what I wanted to do, met the guy that wrote the book, The Portfolio Life, engaged his company to help me kind of really figure out what I wanted. And I've created a life where I have tremendous flexibility and tremendous control over my time. So I do what I love to do. I ski 70 days a year still. Now, in all fairness, I have a ski house, so I can work till 11, ski from 11 to 1, and then ski after. So, you know, I would still say I'm working, but, yeah. You know, I go on a lot of vacations with my wife every year for the last 15 years. I've taken each one of my kids on a 4 to 7 day father son trip with all three of my boys. At first I did it because I was working too much and traveling too much. So it was a way for me to have quality time with each of my kids. And then when I shift lifestyle, we just like doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lot of fun.
And just quickly though, so this GCCA is really your dad's company that you...
CCA, Global Partners, is a company I joined after my father sold off most of our business.
Okay.
My father became very ill And so we had to reorganize things. So my father stayed in the kitchen business, but we sold our electrical business to Westinghouse.
Okay.
And we sold our videotape reel business off and a few other things. But anyhow, so my father, I left and I went to work for this then very small company, which I stayed with. But that was not my father.
Was it hard to leave your dad's company?
It was hard to leave working for my dad, but, you know, did I feel like I actually left working from my dad? No, because we talked all the time. Mm-hmm. And we were very close. My father had told me that he didn't want to hire me right out of school. He wanted me to go work for somebody else. So when this whole thing happened and he decided for his own health, that he wanted to, because the company had grown when I joined it. After getting my MBA from $3 million in 4 years, we were doing $25 million a year. So wow. All of a sudden, the borrowing, working with the banks, all these things became much more difficult. And the company was very successful. You know, we made a decision for my father's sake to change. And, you know, from our point of view at the time, you know, my coming back into the business in 2 or 3 years was a real possibility. The idea was I was going to experience a different kind of business and a different kind of thing. And we just never ended up going back. My sister ended up working with my father. My father since passed and my sister still runs the business.
So, I guess one of the questions I was thinking about as you were talking and sharing this story is as you start at this small CCA Global Partners company and it grows and grows and grows. If you were to put a percentage, I don't know if this is possible or not, you know, what percent would you the success was due to people like, because it's not one person, but people like you who had the foresight and leadership ability to work in this environment and grow? Because, you know, when you're in a fast growth market, you can lose the culture. You know, you can lose sight of the bigger picture. So, like, what percent do you think was due to the success of the leadership in the organization?
Well, I want to be clear. You know, I led a part of the company. I definitely had two co-CEOs,
sure.
Alan Greenberg and Howard Brodsky, who were major mentors to me.
And that's what I was trying to say, like the total leadership, I guess, not just necessarily you as part of it.
Yeah, the percentage for me is pretty easy. It's 100%. Mm. Okay, it's 100%. Now, would the business have survived if we hadn't had such an engaging attitude and felt the importance of inclusion and discussion and not, you know, being dictatorial, but you know, I would say that you never want to be in a democracy in a business. That's a failed concept. But inclusive, listening, you know, we used to go around the country. They still do. I'm just no longer at the company. You know, and do 15, 16 town hall meetings a year where every franchisee and every co-op member had. And that was for just one division, every division, different sizes, just to have an opportunity for them to talk and share. We had regional networking groups for them to have input in. We did massive surveys to get input and get feedback. Made all the difference in the world. And, you know, put in perspective, there are very few companies that on average grew 29% for 20 straight years through some of the worst economic recessions, not as bad as the one we just had. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a culture. And what was amazing, and I give this statistic out because I think it's really impressive. When I entered the floor covering business and when I first started, Carpet One was the business. That was the business. When I left, there were like 14 companies. We were in the bike business, mortgage business. We were in the lighting business. We were in formal wear. We were all these different businesses and then variations of, like, we had different formats and floor covering. But when I joined the company in 1988, there were 35,000 retail floor covering companies today. And today there are 12,000 retail floor covering. So two-thirds of the industry disappeared in that time frame. And I would say over what is now 30 years, the number of companies that left CCA because they went out of business in cumulative is 100. over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we went the first, I want to say, 15 years before a single company went out of business that was a member of the Carbon One Co-op. And even during this last recession, the number of companies that, you know, that went closed down were maybe 25 or 30 or 40. I don't really know fully, mm-hmm. but compared to the industry, it was very small.
So why leave?
And why'd I leave the company?
Yeah.
It was really a question. There were several issues involved. One of the two founders passed away, and I really liked him. And another very bright, very talented guy came on board, but I didn't feel quite the fit. And I had met this gentleman who wrote this book, The Portfolio Life, and I sat back and I said, you know, do I want change? And it just seemed like a really good chance for change. So I took a year off. And I thoroughly enjoyed my year off. Highly recommend it to anybody that could do it. And at the heart of who I am and what my passion is in business is to help small businesses thrive. That's why I've always liked franchising. That's why I've always liked co-ops. And so what I do now on a consulting basis, which is primarily in the co-op and franchise world, is I help those organizations help their franchisees be much more successful.
And so that kind of leads me to your book, Engaging Leadership, right?
Yes.
And so
with an eye for involvement for people that want to know.
So it's I-N-G-A-G-I-N-G, leadership.
Leadership.
So let's quickly transition to that, and then we'll wrap up here. You know, you spend your time in this company, you get out, you take your year off, you ski your 175 days in a row to find Evan and have some fun. And to your point, God help me, I hope I get a year off at some point. But you then decide at some point to write a book over the next several years. I'm not sure if it was right after that or during this period. But what's the impetus of the book? Like, what are you trying to convey to the general audience?
Well, I want to first convey the why.
Okay.
And then the impetus, because the why is interesting, and what the book teaches is also interesting. But I actually wrote this book to document the methodology that has made me successful in business and leadership. And by the way, Engaging Leadership should not be interpreted as just a book on business, because you're a leader in life, whether you're, you know, a member of a family, you got friends, everybody is a leader of some sort or form. But I actually wrote this book for my kids. I want my kids, who hopefully someday I'll get a chance to work with, to understand and know me. And so I wrote this book. If I had written this book and never sold a single copy, I would have been happy, because I'm so proud of the book. And I know that my kids reading this book will understand who I am, what made me tick, and what I did that made me successful in business. What I bring out in the book is the importance of creating a shared common vision within an organization. I call it winning the hearts, minds, and souls of everybody. And there are so many companies that just assume that every employee knows the vision of the company. When I do consulting, I interview people, and I interview customers, suppliers, I interview employees. I always start off, in your own words, what is the vision of the company? And 99% of the time I get, I don't know, sell more. people don't really know.
Yeah.
I just literally today at 11:30 this morning, just before our call, was doing a job interview on behalf of one of the people that works in the company. By the way, and this is the way I work, is I said, you know, if you like this person, I don't need to interview. If you have questions you want me to find out, I'm happy to interview. If you think talking to me will increase the likelihood of them accepting the job and you want me to motivate them, I will do that. but I'm not going to do the interview just because you're covering, you know, you're protecting yourself because you can say, well, you left the person too. this manager is relatively new. So I want to make sure that was clear, but he says, you know, I think it would be good for this person's morale to know that the CEO of the company cared enough to interview him. So anyhow, whenever I interview people, I review the entire vision of the company with them, our values, what it means. Every month when we have a team meeting, one person on the team does it. I explain to this person, if you're hired, the first month you get to watch someone else. The second month it's going to be you. That once you're hired, we're going to spend an hour or two going over not just this, but the entire strategic and tactical plan. I review the financial statements with everybody every 3 months. And I create a culture where people feel heard because they are heard. They feel heard because I think that their voice and what they have to say matters and can be game changing for the company. And so what my book talks about is how you build that shared vision, what you look for, how you think, how you talk to people. A lot of the ideas in the book, I mean, I just quickly share a couple of them, is distinguishing fact from opinion. Mm-hmm. So many times we talk in terms of opinion as if it's a fact. And then it's hard for someone to say, well, I have a different opinion, because it's almost like they're calling you a liar.
Yeah.
So it's really important to do that. I talk about looking for the kernel of truth. So when you talk to someone who has a different point of view than yours, don't listen for why they're wrong. Listen for why they might be right or partly right. You listen totally differently. And it's how to embrace. And essentially, it's creating a culture where every person feels like they're a partner, like they're valued, like they're cared for, like their voice matters. And I think that's a game changer in business. And, you know, my entire life, I've run growing businesses. CCA, that's what I did. Total last year grew 37%. This year, we're slated to grow 40%. And you don't grow like that. In an industry where, by the way, we only have like 4,000 competitors, because it just happens. You grow like that because you become a team. You find out the opportunities. You work together. You share. People are selfless. And that's really important.
So I just want to be clear, because maybe I'm missing this or not, but you clearly have a purpose for spelling engaged differently. And I think you said it, and maybe I missed it just briefly. But yeah, I'm looking at the index of the book, the table of contents, sorry, of the book, and you keep throwing the word engaged with an IN.
Yeah. Let me give you a distinction. The I, and the reason I use an I, is involvement. The concept of involvement. So I'll give you a simple analogy. I am a huge Red Sox fan. I follow their games. At the moment, I'm a disappointed Red Sox fan because they just lost out. Yeah. But I, you know, I'm a Red Sox fan. I watch the games. I'm very engaged. I read the papers. I listen to talk radio. John Henry, the owner of the team, who I have never met my entire life, has never called me up and never asked my opinion, ever. Doesn't appear to care, I might add, nor should he, but I'm engaged, okay? There are many businesses that will share their values, mission, vision, that will share their plan, and they will engage employees that way, but they're not involving them, and that's the difference. Now, there's tons of research. My book, I cover it. Gallup does great work on engagement in the workplace.
It's pretty low.
And it's very low. But the top quartile outperforms the bottom quartile by 3.8% in earning growth. So there's a huge correlation between engagement. But I take engagement to a higher level, which is not just letting people know what's going on, but it's really this level of listening, asking, and having them participate. And that's why I write it with an I instead of an E. By the way, it also makes it very easy to find it on Amazon in comparison if I had an E, because then people would just think I'm trying to help them get married. but it is the crux of my entire business, and not just my consulting and my training company, when we work with clients about training, we say, look, you want great training? We need to meet with and do work with the end user of the training. So we don't want subject matter experts only to be the senior managers. We want it to be the field people that actually do this every day, because we're going to write better training. And we do write better training because of our methodology, because we involve people. And, you know, it's, you know, we joke that, you know, because our purpose is to make effective training easy, not make crappy training cheap.
So talk to me. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say there's a big difference.
Well, and I was trying to bridge that over to Tortle Training. What exactly is this business that you own here? I mean, I get the consulting side of it, but what is this training that you do here?
Well, we have two major components to the business. One is we have a piece of technology that houses training, e-learning courses, also schedules all the training, you know, live training, all the training. It's a central place for a learner to go. We create certification tracks. We can even award people with badges on LinkedIn. And that's a piece of technology that companies use to know where their trainers are, organized and efficient. That's a big part of our business. The other big part of our business is we develop e-learning. So most e-learning out there is bad. It's like a PowerPoint. Someone's reading it to you, ask you a few questions. So we create interactive e-learning. So one of my favorite examples is Dairy Queen came to us and said, hey, we want help teaching people how to make blizzards. So we built a module where you come into a room and you got a blender and you got ice cream and you got toppings, and a thing will pop up and say, make a banana split blizzard. And then they have to put in the right ingredients. They put the top on, they push a button, and either the blender explodes because they made a mistake, or the blender goes, hey, congratulations. Yay. You know, we make it fun and we make it interesting, and think of how much ice cream Dairy Queen has saved by having people practice making blizzards on a machine rather than practicing with real food and throwing food away. And also think about the speed of getting a new employee up to speed. But we do this with, like, you know, we try in every single training class we have to have interactivity where the user demonstrates knowledge. We teach hand washing. It's one of our most popular courses because every restaurant needs to teach people how to wash hands. So, you know, we educate them, we talk about it, then we put them in a room. And you know what? In that room, there's a sink, there's paper towels, there's a hot and cold. They've got to run the water, and then they, you know, got to turn the hot vessel. They got to put their hands under the water, and they have to keep them there at least 30 seconds. If they don't keep them there 30 seconds, they fail. When they get done drying their hands, they have to take the paper towel and shut the water off with the paper towel. Because they shut it off with their hand, they just recontaminated their hands. Mm-hmm. So we talk about all that stuff, but then they actually have to prove they know it. And we've helped, you know, lots of companies. I mean, you go to, we've taught the restaurant staff how to cook. Mm-hmm. We've taught customer service skills, sales skills, you name it. Our expertise is not in the function. Our expertise is in the methodology.
So
I've got to tell you, I have a hard stop in 2 minutes, and I apologize.
Okay, well then let me then just wrap this up. We had our pre-talk was a little bit long. I had a question about virtual reality and AR in that space, but maybe it's for another day. So I guess, Evan, I just want to say thank you for your time and energy and your willingness to stop by. And I have one last question for you. How do you, for where you're at in your life, how do you define happiness?
I define happiness for me is the impact I can make on others. I am a very fortunate person. I was about to say lucky, but that would be incorrect because I work really hard for my luck. I'm a very fortunate person, but I value every day the impact I can make on other people. I look to help other people. I look to help small businesses. I look to help anybody out there. I feel so grateful for what's happened to me. I look to help other people, which certainly includes all the people that are involved with me and all the businesses I work in or just advise. And to me, that's to me a great day is when I've helped somebody else.
That's awesome. Thank you, Evan, for your time, energy, and willingness to sit down with me on Executives After Hours.
It's been my pleasure. Just believe it, believe it. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Just believe it, believe it.